Pick session number 10469, reel 4.
Cree reel 4.
That is to say, the 5th Division, consisting of 9 Brigade and 161 Brigade. We've fought our way mile by mile down this Tietam Road. The Japs were occupying rearguard positions wherever there was a suitable place, which was quite frequently. Every 3 miles at least, we had come up against them and had to develop an attack, deploy. We had the tanks with us, we had the carbineers with us, and they were of very great assistance. But we were out of range of our own artillery. They couldn't follow because the road was in such a state. We had the support of the medium artillery as long as they were in range, but that didn't last forever. So we then had to continue the advance by using our own firepower of mortars, and there we made great use of the airstrikes. The brigade was consisted of the 3rd 9th Jots and ourselves in the 3rd 14th. The 3rd 9th Jots were fully operational and were very good. They were in very great form. And the 3rd 14th Punjab had been very badly hit by tick typhus, which began to afflict us at that time. And that was a pretty deadly sort of disease. And nothing much could be done about it.
Is this the same thing as scrub typhus?
Same thing, yes. Scrub typhus. We got a few men that went down with it, and one or two of them died, I'm afraid. Nothing whatever could be done about it. Nobody could be evacuated, and nobody could be flown in until we eventually reached Imphal. At Tidim, there were airstrips where light aircraft could land, and the worst casualties were taken out. But the 3rd 14th Punjab were so badly affected that they had to be taken out altogether. And they were taken out of the division and were replaced by the 4th Jammu and Kashmir Infantry. That was state forces, part of the army of the Maharaja of Kashmir. And the 4th Jammu and Kashmir Infantry were a jolly good lot of old soldiers. We found them very good. All their officers were Kashmiris, Indians, of course. They were very willing and jolly good. They took the place of the 3rd 14th. And so we pushed on bit by bit. Eventually we got to Tidim, which was at the top of a mountain, the Chin Hills, high up. And it was from there that we had withdrawn earlier on in that year. 17th Division had withdrawn from there when found themselves attacked and surrounded by the Japs. We then continued the advance, and we had to take Kennedy Peak, a very high feature, which was very strongly held, and that was bombarded by the Strategic Air Force and absolutely blown to bits, and was captured by 161 Brigade. But in the meantime, the W. Yorks had fallen very low in numbers again, and in fact we could only raise one full-size company with mortars and signals and so on. It was a battalion less 3 companies we were. So it was decided that we should join up with the Royal West Kents, the 4th West Kents in 161 Brigade, who had also fallen low in numbers, and we were to form one composite battalion. So off they went, the rest of our battalion, a strong company, and a mortar platoon, and signals, etc. And we had company sergeant majors acting as platoon sergeants, sergeants acting as section commanders, in this company. So it was a pretty formidable company.
What date was this approximately, by now?
This was, about September, 1944. And the advance continued, pushing down the road and making little hooks either to the right or left to get round these Jap positions. And our company took its full part under the West Kents. But battalion headquarters of the 2nd West Hawks had nothing much to do but to trail along behind. And it was rather boring for us. And eventually we got down into the valley, and coming in on our left down the Kabul Valley were the 11th East African Division. They had come all the way down the Kabul Valley from Imphal in order to reach the Chinwin. And we met up with them at the bottom at the Chinwin River itself. And 5th Division then stopped and was taken out, flown back and went into rest billets in Kohima. It went back into the places we had occupied in Kohima, and there they spent Christmas. 5 days at last were given a rest.
What kind of a Christmas did you have?
Oh, very good. I think they'd done wonderful efforts, and they'd got all the necessary fixings were produced. I think the troops had a very good Christmas, but I myself was not there, because when we got back to Kohima, I was ordered to report myself to headquarters, 14th Army, back in Imphal, and that I was going to be moved on somewhere else. So back I went there, and I reported to General Slim, and he said that I was going to be given command of one of the brigades in the East African Division, 125 Brigade. And I had served with East African troops before, as I've told you previously. And I was given command of this 125 Brigade back on the Chinwin. So off I had to go back to the Chinwin. I said goodbye to the battalion. I was extremely sorry to leave. I went back and I found this 125 Brigade and joined them there. But the fighting was pretty well over as far as they were concerned. They had crossed the Chinwin and formed a bridgehead, and the 2nd British Division were coming down to cross it, and a tremendous bridge was being built over the Chinwin pontoon bridge. And then 2nd British Division began to arrive and cross the river, and 11th African Division was withdrawn back to Assam, and the divisional commander told me to go back to Manipur Road and make arrangements for their reception in Assam. So I went back to Manipur Road, and I spent my Christmas in the rest camp in Manipur Road. And then I made contact with the local people there, the area staff, and arranged for accommodation for the African Division when it arrived, which it came back pretty soon after that. And we went into various camps round about Manipur Road, not far from Manipur Road, and settled down there. The idea was that the Africans would do a period of training and regrouping, and would then be in a condition to take part in the final assault on Malaya Operation Zipper, you remember?
Yes.
So we did our best to prepare ourselves for that. And then suddenly, our divisional commander, General Folks, the African divisional commander, had gone after the Chinrin operation. He was relieved. And we
How
got.
How did he spell his name?
F O W K E S. He was relieved of his command and went back to Africa. And we got General Mansur, M-A-N-S-E-R-G-H, who I knew quite well because he had been CRA of the 5th Indian Division for some time. He got command of the African Division. I was absolutely delighted because I thought that they wouldn't have bothered to send him unless we were going to do something important. And we were visited by General Slim while we were down there. He had a close and keen look at us. I don't know what he thought, really. I don't think he had a terribly high opinion of African troops. Like many Indian Army officers, they didn't care for African troops. Didn't think much of them.
Do you think they were at fault in that?
Well, there's a bit of prejudice about it. I mean, Indians don't like Africans anyway, you see, in the country in India was not very keen on the African troops.
And the civilians, you mean?
The Indian Army were not very impressed by them, I don't think. The Indian Army were very jealous of their own reputation, you know. They didn't think that anybody was as good as the Indian Army. Especially not a lot of barbarian Africans. Anyway, I don't know if that may be, but then the 5th Indian Division was in process of getting ready to go back into Burma when they lost their divisional commander in an air crash. General Warren and his G1 were lost in an air crash, and they ran into a mountain somewhere. Nothing was ever more found or heard of. Well, this was very serious as the division was about to move forward. So they had to have a commander who knew the division already. So they took Mansur away from the 11th African Division and put him to command 5DIV. And my spirits fell accordingly. And he was then replaced by General Dimeline, who had been commanding a brigade of East Africans separate from the division, the 22nd Brigade, which had been functioning down the Gangaur Valley, where the 7th Division were making a crossing. And he had been commanding the 22nd Brigade and was taken out and came back to command the 11th African Division. And then, all of a sudden, all our vehicles were taken away from us. All our fighting vehicles were removed for the troops going to do the operation in Burma. The operations in central Burma. We lost all our best part of our transport. That wasn't a very good sign at all. And shortly afterwards, we were moved back to the Ranchi area in Bihar and Orissa, and went into various camps round about Ranchi and tried to pass the time as profitably as possible. It wasn't all that easy because, anyway, I for one realised that we weren't going to be used again in an offensive role, and that we were only really from then on just going to mark time until we could be sent back to Africa. Well, we hung around Ranchi for some months training and doing what we could to try and maintain interest and morale. We did quite a bit of training, I must say. And for the first time, the Africans were issued with mules, which they hadn't had during the Gabor Valley operation. And they would have been invaluable to them. Well, they were issued with mules and taught how to look after them, and they took to them very well. They liked the mules and got on very well with them. Well, then VJ Day came along, and the atom bomb went off, and then we had VJ Day. So quite obviously there wasn't going to be anything more exciting to do. And I applied for repatriation. I had been abroad for 7 years then, and I was well eligible for repatriation. So I applied for repatriation. And in October 1945, I was sent home on repat. I had to relinquish my brigade, of course. Somebody else was given it. And I came back to England. And soon afterwards, I became married to my wife, whom I had not seen for 7 years. We got married, and after a bit of hanging around, I was sent out to the Control Commission in Germany to join the headquarters of the Control Commission at Minden.
You were saying that the Indian Army underestimated the... Well, had a low opinion of the Africans.
I think they did, yes.
Do you think that was an underestimation of
that? Yes, order? Yes. The Africans were quite all right, but they had their limitations. They were not used to being shelled or bombed. They didn't like it much. And if they had to do an attack, they liked to do it in a formal way, and use a whole battalion to attack sort of one section post of Japanese, you know, and they'd deploy two companies, another company in reserve, and attack in great form, and would succeed, but using far more force than was necessary. They had all the way down the line there, African ranks were duplicated with British. I mean, all the officers were British. There were no African officers at all. They had tried an experiment, but it didn't work. And starting with the RSM, there was an African RSM and a British RSM. Company sergeant majors the same. Platoon sergeants the same. British platoon sergeant to every African platoon sergeant. And then things like signals and MT and so on, they had British NCOs throughout. And I myself think the result was that the Africans did not take responsibility, as long as they knew that there was a British NCO to do it for them, to back them up. And therefore the Africans didn't produce their full potential. Whenever there was a patrol ordered, it was always specified that a British rank should accompany it, you see. It should be commanded by a British rank, either a British NCO or a British officer. And the strain on the British was too much. They were overworked. Because if you sent an African sergeant out on a patrol, when he came back, you really never knew for certain if he'd ever been there or not. And they would tell you a long roundabout story. And you couldn't be too certain if he had seen what he was supposed to see, if he'd ever actually done it or had made it all up. So that a British NCO or officer had to always go to make sure that they did what they were supposed to do. They were not cowards, but they didn't like shellfire and they didn't like responsibility very much.
What were their good qualities as troops?
On the other hand, their physique was excellent, and they stood up to the climate. They didn't get half so sick as the British and Indian troops. They stood up to the disease and climate very well indeed. And they filled a gap, but one did feel that really they were a hell of a long way from Africa, and that they could hardly be said to be defending their homelands and Tanganyika and Nyasaland when they were fighting in Burma.
Did you see much of the Burmese civilians during the campaigns in Arakan and Imphal?
Yes. We saw quite a bit in the Arakan of the Burmese civilians. The Arakanese were mostly on our side and did a lot of work for us. in this thing called V-Force, which was a sort of civilian scouting force behind the Japanese lines. And they were very good, the Arakanese V-Force. They did a lot of very bold work, and if the Japs caught them, they shot them at once. And on the Teknov Peninsula, there was a Buddhist monastery there, and we used to listen all day to their prayers and chants and ringing of gongs and things. In Imphal, there were some locals still there.
These were Nagas, were they?
No, in Imphal itself, they were Kukis. There were Nagas in Kohima, but in Imphal, I think they were called Kukis, the people who lived there. They were a similar sort of tribe, the cultivators. There weren't a great many of them that I ever saw, but there were some. They were still attempting to cultivate their fields.
What was the attitude of the Kukis to the war? Did they just want to keep out of it?
They were 100% on our side. The Assam Rifles were largely Kukis, recruited from the Kukis, and we had a section of Assam Rifles attached to us to act as guides and interpreters, and they were pretty good. I thought very useful chaps. Down the Kabul Valley, we met literally nobody. They'd cleared out most of the local inhabitants. I don't remember seeing anybody down by the Chinrin at all. I think they'd all got out of it. And Tidim, around Tidim there were still a lot of Chins living there, and there was a thing called the Lu Shai Brigade, which was actually part of V-Force, which consisted of units raised from these hill tribes, from the Lu Shais and the Chins. And they were commanded by a Brigadier Marindan, who was a member of my regiment.
How did he spell his name?
Marindin, Marindin. He had commanded the 1st West Yorkshires on the retreat from Burma in 1942, and he commanded this brigade, Lu Shai Brigade of scallywags, who did a lot of very good work. They couldn't get mixed up into really heavy fighting, but they did raids and harassing and scouting. They were useful. And there was still quite a few civilians in Tidim. There was a mission there. There had been a big mission. I don't know what denomination it was, but that was still operating there. And they were all entirely on our side, those people. They didn't want the Japs at all. They'd had some of it. They didn't want any more.
Did you ever feel that the Japanese might break through it in Imphal?
Did they?
Did you ever feel that the Japanese might break through?
No, I never did, no. I never for a moment felt that they would. We were tremendously strong, really, in Imphal. Numerically, we were stronger than the Japs. But the great thing was we had the air, you see. The Japanese air was pretty ineffectual. It used to turn up every now and again and drop a few bombs and never did any damage. They were quite NBG, really. Their artillery was irritating. They used to shell us from long range, particularly in the admin box. They used to shell us with their big guns from Boothie Dong. That did a lot of damage in the admin box. It hit the ammunition dump one day and set that off, where all the artillery ammunition was dumped up on that hill. That caused a heck of a lot of damage. And they set a lot of vehicles on fire with their shells. But their air was ineffectual, not much of it. Whereas we had this absolute command of the air, you see, and we were entirely supplied by the air. And we also had the bombers, this strategic air force general under an American command. They supported us at all times.
What was your own attitude towards the Japanese enemy? Did you hate them or respect them or what?
I was quite scared of them myself. I thought they were very nasty people. They would die, but they wouldn't lie down, if you know what I mean. They literally did hold their positions absolutely to the last man in the last round. They're the only people who ever really did that. They were immensely determined. And on our advance down the Tudim Road, we used to come upon pockets of these chaps all lying dead under a tree or something. They had either died of complete starvation, or in some cases they had committed suicide by holding a grenade to their bosom and pulling the pin out. They'd rather than be taken prisoner. And we'd find that their food consisted only of an old sock full of rice and some bits of raw fish, absolutely terribly smelly and nasty. And they'd been living on this for ages.
So they were
extremely hardy.
The Japanese in the Imphal area were in a worse condition than those in the Arakan.
Yes, the Japanese, after the Imphal, after they started retreating, they were in a terrible state. They really were awful. They were, you see, they'd got no supplies while they were there. They were depending entirely on capturing our supplies. But when we didn't retreat and hand it over to them, we supplied ourselves from there. The Japs were absolutely done. They had no source of supply at all. Their own supply arrangements were terribly primitive, very, very ineffective and inadequate. And they were just living on absolute subsistence diets of rice and bits of old fish.
Were the British troops determined not to be captured by them?
Captured by them?
Were the British troops determined not to be captured
by them? I think they were, yes. That was another thing. It was no question of surrendering to the Japs. Whatever the situation, you couldn't do that. There was certain death if you did, probably in a very nasty and painful way. We did have one or two prisoners taken in the Arakan. A patrol that we sent out was betrayed by a V-force filler, one of these Arakanese. He was a dud one. But mostly they weren't, but this happened to be a dud, and he betrayed this patrol, which was captured by the Japs. And the chap had to walk the whole way back to Rangoon, where we found him again.